ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the Prime Minister recalls Parliament from its Christmas break to push through new laws after the Bondi terror attack. Also, Victorians surveying the damage caused by the massive bushfires. And Australian actress Rose Byrne scores a win at Hollywood's Golden Globe Awards.
Thank you for believing in me and giving me this opportunity. We shot this movie in 25 days for like $8.50. Thank you so much. This is like a tiny film, so this is a huge thing to be up here.
First this evening, the Prime Minister has announced he's recalling Parliament early to debate new laws in the wake of the Bondi terror attack last month. Rather than starting back in February as scheduled, Parliament will sit on Monday for a condolence motion for the victims of the tragedy, and Mr Albanese is aiming to have the new laws passed on Tuesday. Evelyn Manfield is our reporter at Parliament House in Canberra. Evelyn, the Prime Minister has been under pressure from the opposition to recall Parliament early. How has he explained his decision today?
Well, the government and people within the government have been working for all throughout the Christmas and New Year's break to get this legislation up to scratch. Of course, this is in response to the terror attack at Bondi. They wanted tougher gun laws and also tougher laws against hate speech. So the Prime Minister repeatedly said that he wanted to make sure that legislation was up to scratch before they introduced it into Parliament, and they want to have wide consultation on it as well. So bringing in figures within the opposition, also people within the Jewish community, to get people on side so that when this legislation is introduced to Parliament next week, it can have wide support and can pass through the houses as quickly as possible.
And can you tell us a bit more about the proposed laws that are going to be debated?
It's going to be focused on combating extremism and also anti-Semitism. So there'll be serious offences for hate preachers and leaders who try to radicalise particularly young people. There'll be increased penalties for people who do commit hate crimes. There'll also be a new offence for anyone who's inciting hatred in order to intimidate or harass, and it will also make it easier for the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, to cancel or revoke visas for people who are intent on spreading hate in Australia.
Conduct which is hateful, dangerous and divisive will also be illegal, because just as anti-Semitism and racism are an offence against our Australian values, they should be an offence against Australian law. This afternoon, we've referred legislation to the committee. We want this to be timely, but we also want there to be a proper process, which is why we are going to have this process over the next week.
The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. And Evelyn, the legislation to set up the National Gun Buyback Scheme announced by the Prime Minister will also be debated. What's the reaction to that plan been like so far?
Already we're getting some pushback from a number of the states, because the proposal here, which the Prime Minister says is the largest measure of this kind since John Howard was Prime Minister and responding to the attack in Port Arthur, the Prime Minister wants the states to go 50-50 in this buyback scheme where people are reimbursed, gun owners that is, for handing in their guns. So on Friday we heard pushback from the government down in Tasmania saying that they were concerned about this funding arrangement. And then today we've also heard from the government in the Northern Territory saying that if the federal government wants a national buyback scheme, they should fund it. They're saying they're welcoming the Royal Commission, which of course was announced in recent days in response to Bondi, and they're supportive too of recommendations around better federal criminal intelligence sharing, but they're really pushing back on that funding proposal by the Prime Minister.
Evelyn Manfield reporting for us from Parliament House in Canberra. While there's been an easing of the weather conditions in Victoria, several major blazes are still burning around the state. At least 350 buildings, including homes and other structures like sheds, have been destroyed, and more than 400,000 hectares of land burnt out. The death toll remains at one, with cattle producer Max Hobson killed in the Longwood fire in central Victoria. We'll cross to our reporter at Longwood in a moment, but first, this report from Alison Shaw.
As fires ease in parts of Victoria, some, like Judy, are now sharing their stories of survival.
I grabbed a couple of old passports, and after that was, you know, mum's old jewellery box, a set of clogs from the wall that have been with me since I was about 10.
Judy evacuated on Friday from her home in Harcourt, about 100 kilometres northwest of Melbourne. It's still standing, but her neighbours haven't been so fortunate.
The next kilometre of houses towards the heat of the fire are all wiped out. Well, it's a bit of that sort of, you know, guilt of my house is fine and my community is partly flattened.
Harcourt and Longwood in central Victoria and Natty Mark in the state's west are among the hardest hit areas. Homes have also been destroyed in northeast Victoria near the New South Wales border in the Walwa River Road fire. And near the southwest coast, a fire has raged in the Otways. In total, firefighters battled a dozen uncontrolled blazes across the state today. And the number of structures destroyed has climbed past 350. Horsham Deputy Mayor Beck Sluggett lives in Pimpinio, where the Natty Mark and Grass Flat fire has ripped through.
It's going to be a long road, and I know from the Black Saturday fires that we had here in Horsham and fires that our family were impacted by in 2006, that there's still things that haven't been replaced. You end up with a new normal. Things don't go back to how they were pre-fire.
State and federal governments have pledged more than $19 million in immediate support packages for affected residents. Victorian Premier Jacinda Allen says assistance is available.
Yesterday with the Prime Minister, we made announcements around personal hardship payments, and on the personal hardship payments, we've had more than 430 payments already being made. Today we're activating the emergency assistance payments. These are payments of up to $52,250 for people to re-establish their principal place of residence, and it's particularly focused on people who do not have the insurance that they needed to have. So it is about recognising that there are going to be many who have financial difficulty.
But some communities say they've been left out from the disaster payments. Dave Wortman is a volunteer firefighter from Grania and a councillor at Tawong Shire in the northeast of the state, where fires are still burning.
Now, as far as that Australian Government disaster recovery payment, Tawong's not included in the list, which is very disappointing for the people that have been so severely impacted. You know, houses and, you know, farm infrastructure, but there has been livestock losses. And see, that creates another problem. Burying dead livestock, most heavy machinery contractors are involved in the fire. And so trying to get people to bury livestock is another real big issue.
The Victorian government says $10 million is also being provided for fodder support for feeding livestock and mental health support. While the full extent of livestock losses is still unclear, the Victorian Farmers Federation says it's currently estimated to be more than 15,000. Authorities say the threat from fires isn't over, and they're urging the community to stay alert. Tim Weebush is the Emergency Management Commissioner in Victoria.
Whilst the conditions are easing in some parts of the state, even the slightest of winds are still causing those fires to move around.
A total fire ban has been enforced today in the north central and northeast districts, with a high fire danger in most parts of the state.
Alison Chow. For more on the fires, ABC reporter Tavleen Singh is in Longwood East, about 100 kilometres north of Melbourne.
Sam, the situation here hasn't improved in the last couple of days. The fire in Longwood has been reduced. The warnings for it has been reduced to watch and act. But the danger and the sense the community has here still remains the same. I was walking around earlier and talking to people, and I saw CFA fire trucks rolling by because they're still kind of assessing roads and making sure that they're of use. The Hume Freeway opened up yesterday. But anywhere you look in Longwood East area, you see burnt trees left and right of the road. So there's still embers within the tree, there's still some smoke around, and the smell of smoke here is still quite dense. Now, The fire here has claimed 150 structures, and that's in Longwood area alone. That includes homes lost, but also livestock loss, cropping land, vineyards. So the fire here has damaged a lot of property, but that damage is still not clear. People are still coming back and assessing what they have lost and what they have got to come back home to.
And have you seen many of those damaged properties yourself, or is it still too hard to get into those areas?
Just yesterday, we were able to finally access those roads that had the damaged properties on it. I met a woman, and I think that's probably the most stark image I have of being here in Longwood, is seeing crumpled dead flowers along her house. And I asked her, those must have been beautiful. And she said they were. I spent so long on them. And she's been living here the last 4 to 5 years. She had just put up new shed tops the other day. And she was talking about how just weeks ago she had put new things around the house and it's all gone. And what's really sad is that some of these people thought their houses were safe. For example, the woman I'm talking about, she had left and evacuated when the warnings were there, but her neighbors hadn't, and she had been in touch with them. And they told her, look, the fire's gone by, your house is fine. But the fire did pick up again with the wind change, and it did come over her house and it was lost.
And Tevleen, what have some of the other residents in the area been telling you?
The resilience of this community is shining through despite the tough circumstances they're facing. I was talking to a Longwood local, Neil Tubb. He's a farmer and he's trying to do his best to help the farming community here.
It's by far the worst one I've seen as far as able to manage the fire. It's just a terribly hard fire to manage. But the property and the houses and everything that have been lost in this fire are far worse. It's a far bigger fire than the ones we had here in 65. Because it's such a tight-knit community and it's a small farming community, everybody knows everybody. And yes, I've had a lot of friends that have been very, very hard struck by the fire. Some have lost houses, but most of the ones on that side have all lost stock and all lost all their grass, so they're completely black. Some of them have been fortunate enough to save their houses. Yeah, it's devastating for them. I mean, it's devastating for us because we're such a close-knit community.
Neil Tubb is a farmer in the Longwood area of central Victoria. Tevleen Singh reporting for us. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. In the United States, the US Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia has opened a criminal investigation into Jerome Powell, the chair of the nation's central bank, the Federal Reserve. Mr. Powell says the Federal Reserve has been served with grand jury subpoenas threatening a criminal indictment in relation to his testimony to a Senate committee about renovations to the bank's historic buildings. Bruce Wolpe is a senior fellow at the United States Studies Centre at Sydney University and asked him why he thinks the Trump administration has started this investigation.
This is pure retribution by President Trump because he is so angry with the Federal Reserve Bank Chairman Jerome Powell that Powell has not moved on interest rates at any pace that Trump wants for the American economy. He wants to punish Powell for his obstinacy. He wants to bring the Fed under more dependence of the White House instead of being an independent agency.
What's the history between Donald Trump and Jerome Powell?
Powell was appointed by Trump in his first term, but he's found Powell's outlook on the economy at state and what the Federal Reserve, as under its commitments under law to have the economy function properly and so forth, that Powell's not acting as Trump would want him to do. Trump wants interest rates cut. Powell has refused. He's moved more slowly. And so Trump is now saying, he said several times, I'd like to fire you. You should not serve anymore. And then they had a visit in August, July, August, at the Federal Reserve. He got a tour of the building, and Trump noticed that there is a major renovation project. It is over budget. Trump is now accusing Powell of mismanagement of that renovation, cost to taxpayers. He believes it's criminal. And so he has initiated an investigation that may result in the indictment of Powell by a grand jury, and then a trial. And this is unprecedented territory defined by the anger the president has over Jerome Powell. There's one other thing. His chairmanship expires later this year. He is still on the board of the Fed for another 2 years. A really interesting question will be whether Powell, in order to preserve the integrity of the Fed, that's what he believes Trump is attacking by going after the chairman. whether Powell will stay on the board to provide a continuing balance on the board rather than giving Trump an opportunity to appoint another director to the Federal Reserve Board.
And Mr. Powell issued a rare statement after news of the investigation broke. What did he say and what did you make of his response?
He said that he has diligently followed all the rules and responsibilities associated with this project. He's been very transparent about it, and he wants an orderly completion of it. And so he's saying, I've acted with transparency. Nothing has been done wrong. Absolutely, let's have a review, and let's get on with life. Trump will appoint his new chairman of the Federal Reserve imminently. That person will need to be confirmed by the Senate. So all these issues will be aired in part in that confirmation process, and the politics of the Fed will be on full display in the United States Senate.
Bruce Wolpe is a senior fellow at the US Studies Centre at Sydney Uni. The future of Australia's longest-running Writers' Festival is in serious doubt, with most of its guest authors pulling out to protest the removal of Palestinian-Australian author Randa Abdel-Fattah from the lineup. Several of the Adelaide Writers' Week board members have resigned too, and there are concerns the boycotts could continue on to the larger Adelaide Festival. Angus Randall has more.
For Margot Lloyd from small publisher Pink Shorts Press, Adelaide Writers' Week is one of the biggest events on her calendar.
For a book nerd, it is the best feeling in the world. You're basically walking into a place where people take books seriously, where they love talking about the ideas in books. This all happens for free in Adelaide. It's a free festival. You can just walk in off the street.
But the future of the event is uncertain after a widespread boycott by writers protesting the removal of Palestinian-Australian academic Dr. Randa Abdel-Fattah from this year's lineup. Defending its decision, the Adelaide Festival Board, which runs Writers' Week, says after the Bondi terrorist attack, it would not be culturally sensitive to have her on the program because she has a history of anti-Zionist views. Margot Lloyd is among those criticising the decision and has joined the boycott, a move that'll cause a financial hit for a small publisher like hers.
So many of the authors are saying, you know, I can't in good conscience take part in this, but this was going to be the biggest publicity opportunity of the year for them.
It's not the first time there have been calls to remove someone from Adelaide Writers Week. 2 years ago, Dr. Abdel-Fattah was among those calling for New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman to be removed from the program. Mr. Friedman has previously compared Arabs to insects and says it was not pretty but logical for Israel to inflict substantial property damage and collateral casualties on Arab populations. Thomas Friedman was not officially dumped from the lineup that year, but his planned appearance didn't go ahead due to scheduling issues, according to a letter from the festival's chair. Jo Dyer is a former Writers' Week director. She says dealing with requests to ban writers is part of the job when you're running a festival.
There are constantly petitions from a whole range of people for authors to be included or excluded. That is everybody's right. The issue here is how the organisation itself responds.
Adelaide Festival is primarily funded by the South Australian government, but runs independently. SA Premier Peter Malinauskas says he wrote to the board saying it was his opinion Dr. Abdel-Fattah should not attend, but says he didn't put his thumb on the scale.
I made it very clear to the board that I did not think it was wise to have someone who has been accused of anti-Semitism at best, or done it at worst, appearing at Adelaide Writers' Week. I also made clear to the board that I would not instruct them, that we would not threaten to sack anyone, that we would withdraw their funding. There was nothing like that.
But Jo Dyer doesn't buy the Premier's version of events.
When you have the Premier of a state who appoints the directors to a board and whose government is the main funder of an organisation and who brings sustained pressure onto that board, then clearly it's very difficult for the board to withstand such pressure.
More than 100 guests are believed to have dropped out of Writers' Week so far. So what the final lineup might look like is unclear, and artists booked for the simultaneous Adelaide Festival have also started to drop out, including an entire day of the festival's contemporary music program. Dr. Abdel-Fattah has concerns over the larger future of writers' festivals.
It really depends on the sort of the feckless managerial classes and bureaucrats who run these festivals and institutions, they really have to be held accountable. They espouse and leverage concepts and values like diversity and acknowledgements of country and freedom of expression and artistic freedom and democracy. But when it comes to Palestine, there is an exception, and we have seen all those values betrayed.
Dr. Dennis Muller is from the University of Melbourne's Centre for Advancing Journalism. He believes writers' festivals can survive if the organisers are willing to stand by their writers.
I hope what will happen is that the boards that are constituted to run these festivals will include people who are better equipped to make principled assessments on these matters, and that they will be deaf to politically expedient pressure or to the pressure of sectional interests. I think that they need to make sure that they are equipped to make decisions based on principle and then be prepared to defend them.
Adelaide Writers' Week is set to run from the 28th of February.
Angus Randall. To Hollywood now, where Australian Rose Byrne has won the Golden Globe Award for actress in a musical or comedy film for her role in If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. The movie follows a mother dealing with her daughter's mystery illness while juggling the commitments of her job and marriage. Byrne was one of four Australians nominated for a Golden Globe, which are voted on by entertainment journalists and often seen as setting up the film winners for Academy Award nominations. Kimberly Price prepared this report.
Yes, the Golden Globes, without a doubt the most important thing that's happening in the world right now.
Celebrating achievements in both film and television, the Golden Globes is a big moment for Hollywood. And the host, comedian Nikki Glaser, took the opportunity to poke fun at current affairs.
We'll start the bidding for Warner Brothers at $5. Do I hear $5?
There were four Australians nominated at the Golden Globes this year. Joel Edgerton for Best Performance by an Actor in a Drama Motion Picture as a railroad worker in Train Dreams.
Do you think bad things that we do follow us through life?
I don't know. I've seen bad men raised up and good men brought to the knees.
Jacob Elordi had two nominations, one in the film category for Best Supporting Actor in any motion picture for playing the creature in Frankenstein.
In seeking life. I created death.
And another for his role in the television adaptation of Richard Flanagan's Booker Prize-winning novel, The Narrow Road to the Deep North.
You a gambling man?
Occasionally, yeah. 10 shillings, you make it through the entire year alive.
Also in a television category was Sarah Snook as the distressed mother of a missing son in All Her Fault.
Hi, I'm Marissa. I'm here to pick up my son Milo.
There's no Milo here.
But there was only one nominated Australian who took home a Golden Globe.
And the Golden Globe goes to...
I love her!
I love them all, but Rose Byrne!
This is such a shock. Thank you so much. I share this with Mary Bronstein, my writer-director. We shot this movie in 25 days for like $8.50. Thank you so much. This is like a tiny film, so this is a huge thing to be up here. Thanks to, you know, my mum and dad who bought Paramount Plus so they could watch the Golden Globes from Sydney.
Film critic Stephen A. Russell praised Rose Byrne's performance as a mother balancing work with trying to find a diagnosis for her child's health condition in If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
She plays a mother at the very edge of her wit's end.
You need to be a team. There's a whole...
I know. The problem with that logic, though, is that I'm not a housewife. I work, too.
There is plenty of dark humour in the film. And, you know, anyone who's ever been given unsolicited advice on how best to parent by a bajillion people who should mind their own business, I think that they'll be in on the joke.
Stephen A. Russell says it's a well-earned prize for Rose Byrne, who's had a stellar career.
Even if you go right back to Two Hands, you know, alongside the late, great Heath Ledger, it was instantly obvious to anyone paying attention that they were both, you know, generational talents. I was lucky enough to interview her recently, and she said what she thinks really helped this late career spark is her embracing comedy.
And Rose Byrne is just one Australian winning praise in the United States.
Australians are really down to earth. Even when they get to the top of the tree, they come across really well. The world certainly has their eyes on Australian talent.
Other big winners at this year's Golden Globes include the limited series Adolescence and the film One Battle After Another, with 4 trophies each.
Kimberly Price reporting. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is on the ABC Listen app. And we'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.